On today's episode of Talkin' Tom, we're getting ready for our biggest pitch yet with the movie Nothing in Common, starring the world's most famous typewriter enthusiast, Tom Hanks.
Nothing in Common was released in 1986 and was directed by Gary Marshall, brother of Penny Marshall, director of Big, and is also Jackie Gleason's final film role.
So, if you're ready for an awkward conversation about horse intercourse, failed marriages, and finally some impactful female characters, keep listening.
I can't do the noise anymore. Can't do it.
My mom always said, life was like a box of chocolates.
We're rolling.
Oh my gosh. Welcome back to another episode.
Welcome back.
So, my name's Josie.
I'm Daniel.
And this is Talkin' Tom, the Pod Hanks Tomcast, where we watch Tom Hanks movies and we talk about them.
Talking all things Tom Hanks all the time. Our text message threads are just Tom Hanks things.
Yeah.
Like, what you hear in the podcast is real life.
Yeah.
It is true to life. There is no character here.
Sometimes I stop myself from talking about Tom Hanks.
I just use, like, my most recent gifts all the time are just Tom Hanks now. So, I don't know what that says, if that's good or bad, but it is what's happening. So.
I'm sure he would be flattered.
I hope so. Otherwise, it's coming across. It's very weird.
Well, it's a nice day out.
It's a very nice day, so naturally we're inside.
Again.
The windows shut, the blinds closed, because it's hot.
I went to the Pasadena Rose Bowl flea market with your girlfriend Rachel today.
That's a pretty. I went once. Pretty cool. I didn't have a lot of money to spend there, but
oh
it's
yeah,
cool.
Yeah,
can be.
It. Yeah, I'd never been. It was fine.
It's a little overwhelming.
Yeah, there's a lot of junk.
Yeah,
and then there's also a lot of really cool stuff. That's like
that one seemed. There was a lot of flea market stuff versus a lot of. Local LA markets are more like people's handiwork things.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of flea market stuff at the Rose Bowl one.
Yeah.
But a cool location.
I wasn't really like, I don't need anything right now.
I think I exist that way always, but then I buy stuff anyway.
Oh, yeah. Well, what have you been up to?
Well, it's February, so that has nothing to do with February. I have... What I've been up to is we're moving offices at work, and February is a month of a lot of people visiting. So I have some friends in town who are currently in San Diego, and we have some family coming to town next week, and it's just a busy, busy month.
I've been meaning to ask if I could crash on your couch.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. It's a hostel, basically.
Awesome. Put that couch on Airbnb, man.
It'd be, man.
You get like $50 a night.
But then you'd have people just chilling.
Oh, my literal nightmare.
Yeah, couldn't do that.
Well, today we watched a movie called Nothing in Common.
Which I'd never heard of.
Same.
Kind of surprised that I never heard of it.
Yeah,
I mean, I wasn't paying attention.
Maybe.
Yeah.
So, since it's a movie we both never heard of and never seen, it's time for our favorite game. Everything we do is our favorite. Mine, at least. We've got to guess the plot.
Yes.
So we looked at the movie posters.
Doesn't tell you much.
Really not.
Just two faces.
The one reminded me kind of the anger management poster with Adam Sandler.
Oh, kind of people staring at each other?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like Tom staring at Jackie Gleason, and he's got a... Not Tom, but
big Jack. Old cigar. Oh, yeah, Jackie Gleason does.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think I got the same vibe. I was like... I didn't think it would be a father-son movie, but no. I thought it was going to be people were having to work together. They're, you know, volunteers. Circumstances have brought them together, and they don't like each other.
They have nothing in common.
Yeah.
I thought it was going to be, like, a therapy. I really thought it was just anger management, or, like, The Odd Couple. Like, that's the whole vibe I was getting.
I thought it would be... nothing. Having watched the movie, I think Nothing in Common is not the best title. I think, like... lack of understanding or miscommunication would be better. The whole movie's about people that can't communicate.
Mm. Daddy issues?
Yeah. Parental issues?
Uh-huh.
Relationship issues? commitment issues.
Yeah.
Just issues the movie.
Nice. All right. I'll send that in to Gary Marshall. Yeah. Unfortunately.
You got your next movie, man.
Can't get hold of him anymore. All right. Sum up nothing in common for the dozens of listeners.
Nothing in common is the story of Tom Hanks, who is an ad executive, works for an advertising agency. They're trying to book a big old meaty, it's the worst descriptor, let me
try. No, it's good. Beefy.
They're trying to book a big old airline campaign. Mm-hmm. And as this is happening, his parents' relationship has fallen apart, and he has to really take a deep dive into why he never had a close relationship with his father, and sort of how he approaches relationships in his day-to-day life.
Yeah, there's a lot of stories in this one.
It makes sense as an early Gary Marshall film of kind of what he would become known for in these, like, sweeping 15-people ensemble cast epics.
Valentine's Day.
Yeah.
And, you mentioned it. It takes a while for us to see the connection.
It does, but I ended up appreciating that. The movie runs a little under 2 hours, I think. And you spend, like, maybe the first hour, maybe more, with Tom Hanks and his dad, Jackie Gleason, completely separate. They have brief moments together, but most of their time is spent sort of in, like, how they parallel and how they differ. And it seems, like, long-winded at first, but then when you kind of get to the conclusion of the movie, is like, it basically spends the last, like, 30 minutes being, like, emotional scene after emotional scene. Like, that pays off in ways I didn't expect, so then I ended up really liking it more than I thought I would, making assumptions as I was going along the beginning.
Yeah, I will say I got a lot more emotionally invested in this one than I was expecting.
It was denser than I expected. I thought just another comedy.
Or a romance. It was like... So, Tom plays a gentleman named David Basner, who...
David, like, S. Basner.
David S. Pumpkins?
Yeah. Oh, that's suspicious.
Illuminati confirmed. So, like you said, he's an ad exec. He's kind of in the beginning of his career. He's not, like, entry-level anymore. He's got a promotion, but he's very career-oriented.
And ambitious.
Yeah, he's also, like, cool guy to the max. Like, this guy walks in a room spitting out joke. He's, like, he's a cool dude.
Thinks he's a cool dude. Well, everyone seems to like him.
I know, and there was a few moments where I was like, there's no way that people are down with this, but, like, they love it.
The 80s were crazy.
He, like, drumming on stuff all the time.
Yeah, that was the thing I didn't understand. He has drumsticks, and he's always drumming, but we don't see, does he play drums? Does he have a drum set? He just likes drumming.
He's just fidgety.
He just never can stop moving.
And he's also very popular with the ladies.
Yes.
The opening scene was quite a misdirect. We're supposed to see them... you presume there's a couple in bed. He's like, give me five more minutes. I don't want to get out of bed yet. And they're on a plane. He's like hooking up with the stewardess.
As Tom may have done, we don't know.
God, that guy. With another beautiful blonde.
Yes. I don't know if he has a type or if the casting directors who work with Tom Hanks in this stage of his career have a type for him.
Right, or just the 80s had a type and it was like...
Big hair.
Beautiful blondes.
Yeah.
On the other side of things, his father, played by Jackie Gleason, whose name is Max Basner, he is at the end of his career. He's similar to Tom in the sense that he's always been really good with people, with women. He's always been really good at his job. He's a salesman, and he's notorious for, like, top of his field. But all that changes when his wife leaves him. And that's kind of where our story begins, really.
Yeah.
So, let's not talk about our parents, please. But there's something very interesting about the dynamics, to me at least, of, like, parents and adult children.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's like, fascinating when the relationship changes from caregiver to, like, confidant. Yeah. Or, right?
Yeah, I think I've seen a lot of different people and friends with different relationships with their parents that are all really different. And the movie seems to be a lot about that because we spend a lot of time with how Tom's character interacts with his parents, but also with how one of his love interests, who is the daughter of the airplane... I can't remember what to say. But we also spend a lot of time with the daughter of the airplane the airline executive who owns the company. Yeah. And sort of her relationship with her father, which is a little strange. Mm. And it's sort of about those dynamics.
Yeah. Their relationship, the father and daughter, they're kind of how David and Max are in the beginning, where they don't know anything about each other. It's just purely professional. It's like, you're my son, you do this, I made a mistake.
Yeah, it's very much a, professional is a great word, like a work relationship, almost like a boss.
Yeah.
There's a respect, but there's not a friendship.
Not at all. They really don't seem to enjoy each other. Yeah. It's kind of sad.
That's sort of what the story evolves into. It's about their evolution as kind of that shift in life where we spend a lot of time with Max and he's sort of in deteriorating health in different aspects and really doesn't like the doctor. He's a very prideful guy, refuses the doctor, hates any type of thing that changes his routine, and sort of has to get over that because he has no choice. He's got some serious health issues. Meanwhile, when we meet David, Tom's character, he's sort of in like prime of his life, and his sort of evolution becomes this calming down, having to mature and like really deal with things that were never on his radar. And so he's at the height of this new promotion and this big ad campaign and sort of seeing this woman and fawning over a past love that he actually connected with. It's interesting how they portray Tom, because we've watched a lot of movies now with him in relationships, and we've had Womanizer Tom, and we've had sort of that 80s aesthetic of weird.
Mm-hmm.
But there's, like, very strong women working against him in this that he's seen who have very different wants and needs. And especially in this, they're, like, very complex and sort of test Tom, because I think he's used to a certain way of living and interacting with women that has to shift. Mm-hmm. And these are sort of these two women that he kind of sees in the movie are, like, I don't have the right word for it, but...
Well, let's talk... So Cheryl and Donna are the two main love interests. Donna's an old flame from high school. The only person who's ever met his parents. And she essentially works as, like, his... She says it herself, like, an emotional pit stop for Tom. She's there to be a friend for him, but it's very one-sided. She never gets... kind of the benefit of friendship from him. It's just she's there to listen and take care of him.
He shows up when he needs her.
Yeah. He doesn't ever pay attention to her things. She's into experimental theater and he kind of makes fun of her for it.
Yeah.
Doesn't like take her interests seriously. And then Cheryl is basically his new boss. I loved her at first.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, hell yeah. Girl, like... I thought she was a spy or something. I mean, we didn't know anything.
She's like all black leather.
She got a briefcase, which I will never understand why briefcases were like functional. What is the appeal?
I think just style.
It's huge. They're massive. How do they? And they just have one little teeny handle, so you just have to hold it with your hand, like grip it. You don't get toss it over your shoulder. Down with briefcases is what I'm saying.
I think you already won that battle.
Okay, I'll check that off my list. And then Cheryl's just all business all the time, man. She is kind of fun at first because she is a strong, independent woman who loves having sex.
It's like turned on by horses.
Oh, thank God. I was hoping you'd bring up the weird horse thing.
It's like a weird subplot where they go, her dad likes horses and does he own the horses, I assume?
Yeah, it's his stable.
They're gonna breed them.
Yeah.
And so Tom and her are... David and her watch the ceremony of breeding, and it just it's pretty funny, like all of the shots to keep playing of like what the horses are doing with their feet, what they're doing with their feet, and then cut away, they're frolicking in the garden under a tree.
Oh, it's a masterpiece.
Yeah.
I can't believe that hasn't made its rounds on the internet.
Yeah, who pitched that?
It's
great.
It goes on for a surprisingly long time.
Yeah. A lot of room to breathe in that scene and really think about it.
Yeah, we really were able to make the connection.
Yeah.
Okay, so the horses are getting ready, and now Tom and Cheryl, or David and Cheryl, so she's footloose and fancy free. She just, like, she knows how to shut, she's not emotionally connected to him, or anybody.
Yeah, when she has, like, seems to have a very specific, and she seems to have, like, her life and schedule controlled. She understands how to, like, she stays over with Tom. She's like, I gotta leave. I got stuff to do. Like, has, like, what she wants to do is going to get done, and she figures out ways to do it.
Mm-hmm.
I like what you said about how Tom treats Donna, his old flame, though, is because it's sort of the parallel with his dad. As the movie progresses, you learn about why his parents split, and it's basically because his dad was emotionally abusive, in a sense. I don't think "in a sense" is even a fair term. He was,
mm-hmm.
whether or not he knew it. There's a discussion that his mom and dad have about how they were roommates, but never friends.
Mm-hmm.
And he talks about that it was because she never could fulfill him sexually. Essentially, they had no connection in that regard. And she says, we never tried, we never talked. So
yeah.
Their whole issue is communication, which seems to be, which is something that David has saw happen and affected him, whether he knew it or not. He comes to realize how his dad behaved affected him, and has to kind of shift and deal with that, because he's doing the same things to people in his life. He treats Donna the same way his dad treated his mom, in a way. He is there when he needs something and then not when he doesn't.
Mm-hmm.
And so he has to come to grips with that. And yeah, it gets really this sort of like fleeting, sort of nice, pleasant comedy almost, gets very dense and dark.
Okay, yeah, they start with the jokes. It's like they're just hitting. Like it's like
yeah.
joke after joke after joke. And I guess I didn't understand what the movie was going to
turn into.
Yeah, but honestly, Mr. Marshall did a fantastic job of giving us each perspective and like allowing us to come to our own conclusion along with David. But at first we feel sympathy for the dad because he has been left by the love of his life. That's kind of the narrative I had in my head, that
mm-hmm.
she just left with no warning, no reason. How could she? He has no one to feed him anymore. He doesn't know how to take care of himself. And then you meet the mom and she's like, I had nobody to talk to ever. Like, I was living with a man who, and I was alone.
Yeah, I definitely agree. I think that's the smartest thing it does, is it spends time with each character who's affected so that you build conclusions and then they are usually wrong. And it sort of makes you have to reassess things. And I think that's sort of important because we have fully rounded people rather than this cut and dry, oh, well, they did this, they did this. Even these reveals of, say, dad cheating on mom, at first that's played up as an obvious bad, and it is, but when they talk about it later, you sort of get to the foundation of what caused that, and it doesn't write it, but it gives it a lot of context, like where their mindsets were, that makes them way more interesting characters, and like you pity them, and you feel bad for them, and it's a really interesting kind of emotionally manipulated setup that is, I think, pretty effective.
Yes, and it finally we get to see relationships unfold in a movie that aren't like instantaneous sex and
yeah.
attraction and, you know, mere days. It's like there's history and there's weight and there's complexity in it. Like, finally.
Yeah.
We watch this poor couple kind of come to terms that their marriage is falling apart and is beyond repair through their relationship with their son. And I have to say that Tom gave an incredible performance.
He's really good in this.
I mean, what a freaking gift he is.
We've had a lot of similar performances. There's a lot of like typecasting, I think, of what Tom Hanks was doing in this chunk of the 80s. And this is before Big, but this seems to be sort of a point where like there's a lot of range on display.
Mm-hmm.
And you get to watch it happen and come back, and they really let him do a lot of things. And I imagine that this was the type of movie that you would watch that would then lead you to why they would give the role to him for Big, when you kind of see what he can do
mm-hmm.
with a good script, I think.
Yeah.
More than anything.
It was a pretty good script.
Yeah.
I mean, especially the scene I'm thinking of is the... well, there is a few. The strongest acting I thought so far that we've... I'll say, like, so far in our journey of watching Tom Hanks movies together. Big... not counting Big.
Because yeah.
that movie was great. Is that 4 a.m. argument he has with his dad, where he's realizing, like, we were just, like, mom and I were both here for you, and you just came and left as you needed.
Yeah.
And he kind of, like... he confronts his own father. It's just beautiful. I really...
And dirty.
yeah, it's raw. It's like, and Jackie Gleason can hold his own.
Yeah.
I think the actress who played his mother was not as strong.
Yeah, I would agree.
But Jackie Gleason and Tom really balanced off of each other well, I think.
And it's smart because it doesn't tidy up nicely. Like, yeah. Their fights are gut punches, they're low blows. And it also brings up things in the movie that I think you initially might take as, like, poor taste jokes, or sort of, like, how Jackie Gleason's character always, like, eyes women up and down when they walk by. And that is, like, in that confrontation about the way that they treat people and the way that they exist as, like, negatives of their character. And Tom, you know, he says, you're doing the same thing. And then Tom Hanks realizes, his character realizes that, well, it's because of you. Like, I just mirrored you because it's the only thing I knew.
Mm-hmm.
And so you sort of build their negatives around, like, again, just no communication. Like, they weren't inherently bad people to each other. They just weren't around each other. So they just took what they wanted because they wanted to be, but never were. Because it seems to be sort of Jackie Gleason's characters from, like, an era of, like, a certain perception of masculinity, and then Tom Hanks is sort of in this new era where there's sort of a changing face to it, and I think that dad doesn't know how to talk to son, and that is what happens.
Well, there's so much more to a relationship than the, like, when Jackie says, what did I do for you? Like, or he's talking about his wife, I fed her, and I yeah. gave her clothes, and I gave her a son. If I, like, gave her a place to sleep for 30 years. Like, I did great.
Just all because, I. Yeah.
Yeah, but also, like, that's all he was really, in the things that I know about, like, family systems, especially in the past, not so much anymore, I'd like to think, that's all he was expected to provide, and he did it.
Yeah.
But it's like he doesn't understand, or there's no discussion that a relationship is so much more than just
yeah
providing. It's there's the emotional component and the tenderness and the affection that it's just
they bring that up too when mom and dad are talking and at the hospital, and she says, you know, maybe people shouldn't just date a few times and decide to get married. And he's like, well, we went on 9 dates, and they sort of reminisce about these nice times, but those nice times don't lead up to a successful relationship. And I think it's a weirdly, I think, appropriately topical thing about sort of the dating and the expectations of what a marriage is. Because I think with how divorce rate is in the world, like, it is a discussion that needs to happen. I think we grew up with the expectation that you get married at this age, you do this at this age, and we're sort of changing that. And I think hopefully for a more positive, that you do it for a reason versus the expectation.
Mm-hmm.
And this, as a 1986 movie, is kind of interesting to see that as a discussion piece.
Mm-hmm.
So I was worried the end of the movie would come and Tom would get back with his old flame and he would propose or something, and it would be this, like, very tight wrap-up bow on top. And it doesn't, isn't that?
Mm-mm.
Like, they wrap things up in a very realistic way where you see not where they ultimately end up, but sort of, like, what's next? Like, how do they progress? What kind of... They're at a new emotional level, and how do they move on from there?
Moving through the pain. It's,
yeah.
There's a big moment with his mother. I think her name's Lorraine. So her husband has fallen ill. He's not succumbed to diabetes, but he has diabetes. He ends up losing some of his toes and a portion of his feet to diabetes. It's like a very dark turn.
Yeah.
And you'd think that since they kind of had their big talk in the hospital and they'd come to terms with the fact that they'd both failed each other in their relationship, that maybe there'd be hope and that she would go back to him.
Yeah.
And you see her in their old home. She's bought some groceries. It kind of looks like she's putting the home back together. But she says to David, Tom's character, I can't come back.
Yeah.
Like, I've done this. Because she feels a sense of loyalty and caregiving to her husband of 30 years.
It was like a platonic love to what they created, mm-hmm. but the other type of love is not there.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm glad it didn't. I was worried when she came to the hospital to see him that we were going to get some type of resurgence in love or redemption.
Too.
And no, they just fight because that is what they are wired to do. That's their relationship.
Well, they finally fight.
Yeah.
Because it seemed like they'd been avoiding it.
And it's, yeah, I was glad because I think it's tougher to watch and not as... Well, I think it's more satisfying because the emotion of it is there because it is real versus getting the easy way of, oh, no, things work out. Like, no, they shouldn't work out. That was a bad relationship. Mm-hmm. It led to good things, like having a child, sure, but their relationship was like very bad. It's abusive. I think abusive is a good word.
Yeah, it's unfortunate. I feel like there's probably a lot of relationships who are like that. I'm obviously like not a fan of relationships. I feel like I've made that point pretty clear on this show.
The true point of this podcast.
So, do you think that Tom, that David, would have ended up with Donna, the blonde, if his parents had not ended up getting divorced?
I don't think so. I think we see Donna as another very independent person doing a lot of things and hyper aware of how her relationship is, but she cares about him enough. Like, she's a good friend to him. She's a good friend who's there when he needs her, and she doesn't go to him for things she needs because she knows that he doesn't operate like that, and she doesn't try and change him, and so instead he figures things out and has to change himself. Like, he gets drunk and goes to talk to her, and they have a fight, but ultimately, like, that fight only happens because Tom is at, like, a low point and she really realizes, like, I can't be this person. And I don't think so. I don't think if he would have continued on the same path, I don't think they would have gotten together. They'd be friends.
He would have just kept using her.
Yeah. I think she'd probably get tired of him eventually doing it. Yeah. And then just dump him. Cut him off.
The friendship. Yeah. You can't come around here.
Because she's clearly doing very fine on her own. She's got other men in her life. She's very active in the theater community.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's something that happens a lot in this movie that has never happened to me in my entire life, which is people showing up at my home in the middle of the night and me just, like, entertaining the thought of, like, letting them in.
Yeah. We were just talking about creepy things earlier.
Yeah.
And, yeah, absolutely not. We're, like, in an age where we install video doorbells.
Yeah.
To pretend we're home and to not be home for people we don't want to see. Like, I would never answer the door.
If I wasn't expecting something, there is no way I would open the door. If someone just knocked on it.
Yeah.
That idea, like, I was in the neighborhood.
I barely wake up for phone calls.
I've had to. I have, like, my phone shuts off at night so that the only people who can call me are my brother and my sister.
Oh, yeah. It's a good feature.
Yeah.
Yeah, that is something that has definitely disappeared. That'd be horrifying if someone came to your door and was drumming on it.
Oh, my God.
Like, this is it.
And it's like, gets in the way of his job, because not only is he barging in on everybody else and kind of just, like, taking advantage of their emotional support, but other people are doing it to him. His father calls him in the middle of the night, and his mother, he's caught in the middle of their...
Yeah, there's that whole montage of just how it... And his dad shows up to work, and it's interesting, because the movie, I currently work at a commercial production house.
Oh, yeah.
So I've been on these sets and seen these meetings with ad agencies. Mm. And I used to live in Chicago, so I, like, understood that. And it's interesting to watch, especially in an industry like the advertising industry, to see sort of this, like, the boss of the company painted as, like, a good dude who, like, understands things.
Yeah.
He's going through his own stuff. Again, another character that's, like, given more depth than usual. Like, he's usually a one-note thing, but he's, like, a really interesting character that kind of evolves as Tom evolves.
Mm-hmm. He's, like the comedic relief, almost.
Yeah, and then sort of shifts and has to become, like, this other, like, realistic person of, like, you gotta do what you gotta do. Like, I didn't do this with my parents, and I regret it. And you're like, oh, okay. So everyone has some emotional baggage, and we get to
spend some time with everybody's got a thing with their parents. The boss is also played by, for those of you, this is the only way I know how to, like, make sense of anything in my life is to relate it to some Disney movie that I've seen. So he's the, like, the butler or the assistant to, what is her name? Julie Andrews' character in The Princess Diaries. that's how I know him. I didn't watch a lot of movies growing up.
It's a good movie, though. It's a good one to watch.
I like that. Yeah. So let's talk about, you got to see Chicago in a whole new way.
It's weird when you live somewhere to see it portrayed on screen, because when they do things that don't make any sense geographically, when they park like 2 miles from the building their work, like, that's weird, because I see you walk up, you didn't take the subway, but those are minor things. But they do have to use, like, there's so many great buildings and so much great architecture in Chicago, like, why would you not have the shot in that parking lot versus just a underground lot?
I've never been to Chicago.
It's a great city.
Cold?
Oh, very cold. October's prime time.
Okay.
It's not too hot. It's getting a little cold, light jacket weather.
Ooh.
It's a beautiful city, especially if you have any interest in architecture. Like, the buildings have so much character, and some great tours about kind of all these different people that got to design them.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're there, you should go to the Music Box Theater, the best movie theater in America, and probably the world.
Why?
I spent every Monday my freshman year there. They had a deal on Monday. It's this art house theater. It's like a 1920s art deco theater that's been revamped and modernized. Or not modernized, it's been restored. And it's just the most, like, wonderful place. My favorite theater. I love it.
Wow. Well, maybe we'll bring everybody and we'll watch a movie, a Tom Hanks movie there. Oh, you know what kind of stood out to me was that little marketing scene that they did for Colonial Airlines.
Mm-hmm.
The big pitch they've been working on the whole movie. That was a tight script. Like, that was, we both have already said that we liked the writing in this, but that little scene was just seamless.
Yeah, they spent a lot of time making us think it was going to be really jokey because they were so jokey, but I think that's really appropriate to how that industry works. Sort of this friendship and connection of how you, like, roll your ideas around.
Mm-hmm.
Then they pitch in and just, like, this precise, very elegant, everyone has their part.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of cool. I thought it was going to be a joke.
I know, me too, because that montage, you know, I one of montages. 800 montages in this movie.
With some questionable music.
I know, and some of them just, like, didn't make sense. But that one, I loved. I loved the funny, creative, them coming up with ideas. And I loved the horse fucking montage.
Yeah.
You know.
Beautiful. I'd love to see how that was in the script.
They committed to that, man. It was like, I'm going to find a YouTube clip and I'll put it on the blog.
Yeah. That's worth, if you don't watch this movie, which you should, watch that clip.
Yeah.
It'll make you want to watch it.
We also got, a Tom yell.
A few. Yeah. Some good yells.
Thank God. We also got some in the money pit, but we didn't talk about them.
Oh, yeah, we skipped.
Stupid.
So you get used to them.
Mm-hmm.
It's like comfort food.
You're don't
like,
know yes. what you got till it's gone, yeah. baby.
I'm just glad to have so many.
And we also, sorry, I know I'm just like talking so much. What's new? Another Hanksertary.
Hanksception. Oh, yes. A very stern secretary who's worked for him a long time. We had a few. He worked with a few different secretary receptionist.
He gets along well with the women in that office.
And it seems to be like a platonic get along. Like, yeah. Everyone in that office, like, that office looks like a great place to work.
Oh, yeah.
Everyone really likes each other. They bounce off each other. There's no, like, weird office drama.
Yeah. I get that a lot because I do freelance, so I have new coworkers every couple of months. And sometimes you just click with people, yeah. man. That makes work so nice.
Yeah, the show we met on was like that. I feel like a bunch of us like became friends. Because you work a lot of stuff, and then like you're friends, and then you sort of, you know, you're friends on Facebook. A lot of us still all hang out.
We never talked about how we met on the podcast before.
We'll come once we're establishing our Tom Hanks world, and someday we'll come back and be like, this episode,
this is our you've origin.
Listened long enough, here's who we are, and then no one will listen to it.
And
that's fine.
And the podcast will be over. Yeah. What you had some thoughts?
Well, I was just curious because I like a lot of what the movie's doing. I do think it's a little sloppy sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
There's just a lot of, you were talking about, there's a conversation where they're talking and it just keeps cutting to them in different scenes, but the conversation hasn't really stopped and it just seems like a very weird creative choice. And some of the montages were too long and a little unnecessary. And I do think the pacing could have been tightened up.
Yeah.
Like, I like, ultimately, when you get to the end, I think you appreciate the time you've spent, but I do think there's some room to
tighten up.
Yeah. There's a lot going on that I like. There's a lot of stuff that hasn't aged so well, just in terms of, like, you know, maybe we've seen it too much, or it's just some jokes or comments made where you're like, that's absolutely inappropriate.
There's no way you could get away with doing that in a workplace.
Like, you're gone. Yeah. But not enough that it ever, like, stripped me out of the movie.
I agree. There's, and I loved the writing. I loved the script in this. But some things went on just, like, just a bit too long. That the big confrontation or the big conversation that mom and dad have in the hospital, I loved the beginning of it. I thought the acting on both their parts was exceptional. But when mom starts crying, I was like, girl, like, this isn't... Not that I don't feel sympathy for her character, but
gets a little one-sided when it does that.
Yeah, and I don't think her acting is strong enough.
Though I will say it's interesting in that because of the subject matter of what sort of broke them apart, like his quote-unquote needs, like sexual needs, is like an uncomfortable conversation. And I do think it's really interesting to watch that play out on screen because it is uncomfortable. And they're uncomfortable talking about it. And that's why they probably never talked about it.
Mm-hmm.
So I like that they went for that. And yeah, I do think it's a little one-sided in that regard, but still an interest. I think a very real and interesting choice.
Yeah. I like that we got a lot of information about Cheryl, mm-hmm. the businesswoman. I feel like her character was really strong and fleshed out. I could have used a little bit more from Donna.
Yeah.
The one he ultimately ends up with.
But I would like to see more from her because I think she's really interesting and mm-hmm. I liked her performance. But I do think with the ending we got is appropriate for how much time we spent. We know that she's important. We know that she's very determined and motivated and how she feels about David.
Yeah.
With where they are in life, but how she used to feel. And she knows him. Like, she tells him many things about himself that are, like, these negatives that he's becoming self-aware of.
Yeah.
So when it ends, I think it ends appropriately that we don't see them kiss. We don't see them hug. They just hold hands. So, like, there's just a moment of, like, understanding that we're going to try this.
Yeah.
I was glad that that was what we got versus some grand gesture of...
Yeah, they get married or some bullshit.
Yeah,
That's a good point. I'm glad you said that. I hadn't thought of it like that.
But I think I'm in the same boat, though, that I would like more time because I just liked her.
Yeah, and I just kind of want to know, like, we know she likes how he looks in her pink bathrobe, and we know those little things, but, like, why does she like him?
Yeah. There's sort of a history there, and maybe that's just something that got cut for time. Like, it's not enough to... And speaking of people looking good and stuff, we should probably talk about, like, the second-to-last shot. Second-to-last shot is this very long shot of Tom Hanks pushing a wheelchair.
Ooh, baby.
And it just lingers on. It's just a butt shot.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a good 10, 15 seconds.
It's long.
They knew when they were cutting that movie, they were like, you know what? We got to keep it in. We got to keep it in full.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. They had the choice. Flesh out Donna's character a little bit more.
Keep the butt shot.
Or throw in another montage.
Yeah.
Butt shot. Butts. Yeah.
People, I think, will argue about that. If that choice was correct or not for years. We'll bring it up in future podcasts.
The age-old debate. Yeah. Tom's a good-looking guy.
He's a very handsome dude.
It's hard not to like him. Really, it is really hard. I've never tried. I wouldn't ever.
To not like him?
Yeah, I mean, he's got it. There's no wonder this man has found so much success. Because he can do it all. He can play the, like, sexy guy... He's charismatic, he's fun, and he can wear that weird sweatshirt thing, that weird, like, cut-up sweatshirt, pulling it off.
I'm sure that'll come back someday. And we'll be like, I can't believe we made fun of it.
It's so useful and practical. Yeah.
Looks like what you mow your lawn in.
Uh-huh.
It's like some old clothes that you cut up.
He wears something very similar in Bachelor Party.
Yeah. It's just an 80s thing.
Yeah.
Good ideas for 80s parties that I'm sure we'll go to in the future.
Would you recommend this movie? Would you watch it again?
Yeah, I would watch it again.
Mm-hmm.
It has a slow. It is a slow burn.
Yeah.
But once it grips hold of you, you're in. I think it's I really dug it. And you?
Yes, pleasantly surprised. I mean, strongest performance I think we've seen so far from Tom. I love the story. I don't think we get to see stories like this, of like failed. It's more than just like a failed relationship. It's like the consequences of failed relationships on other people and children and caregivers. I love seeing that transition because I feel very similar. I feel similar things in my own life.
Mm-hmm.
Now that I'm becoming an adult or have become an adult, it just dynamics shift and you're not, people won't take care of you anymore. You gotta take care of yourself and other people.
It's also it's interesting to see, since this is an early Gary Marshall film versus the stuff he became later famous for, I'm sort of surprised this isn't brought up more.
Because
I think he sticks with stories, most of his stories are about relationships and people and families, but don't ever deep dive quite into like the dynamic like this does.
Yeah.
Keep hitting the table.
Me too. It's okay. We're just trying to enjoy a nice Sunday afternoon.
Yep.
I'm drinking some PG Tips.
I thought when we first started, I was like, maybe this will be the one, maybe this will be the dividing movie, the first one we disagree on.
Oh.
At first, I was like, I'm not feeling this movie.
Did I seem like I was?
I couldn't tell. I just thought, like, right off the bat, I was like, oh, maybe not. Mm-hmm. And then, no. Pull the 180 on me.
Yeah. Someday. Maybe we're just too alike.
Yeah.
I don't think we are, though. I think you and I are pretty
that perfect. Or we'll find some people that are, we can...
Yeah, some enemies.
Yeah. Some haters.
Okay. Well, I guess that means it's time for us to talk Tom.
Talk Tom to us.
Talk Tom to us.
Talk Tom to us.
I don't have anything.
Oh, me either.
I don't know why I went to that segment.
I've never heard of this movie, so I was not surprised that my friends hadn't heard of this movie.
Mm-mm.
It's kind of, it was, it's not a readily available movie.
Mm-mm.
Like, it's available on rental, but it seems like Taylor, like, get it up on Netflix.
Yeah, boy.
It needs a proper restoration.
It does.
We had a, I mean, it was like a standard definition quality.
Yeah. Hazy.
What can you do?
No. And also, lots of weird, I mean, I love that pool that they're in.
Yeah.
Anyway, I don't know why I threw to our segment that I had no content for, but something that I do have content for that I know you and I both love. Are you ready for it?
I'm ready this time.
Hank's happenings.
What do you got?
I can't believe I never talked about this on the show before. Tom Hanks has an app called Hank's Writer.
Oh, the typewriter app?
Yeah. I had a moment of weakness in which I went on and bought almost every typewriter.
Yeah, you having that app is the least surprising thing I've ever heard.
It's too bad. He hasn't updated it since, like, 2014. So it's, like, kind of clunky and doesn't work seamlessly.
It was probably something put out with the idea that people would use it, sort of, it's a fun little gimmick, and then would forget. But then people like you have just kept it going, buying all the...
Yes. I like to think of myself as a fan. Maybe other people will think of it as something else.
What are the things you can buy for? Is it like other typewriters or...
You can do different... Each typewriter has its own like thing. When I got it, the first thing I wrote, I just wrote the word broccoli like 17 times with my typewriter. I'll show you.
I don't have it. It also...
Okay. It makes a sound. Do you hear that?
Oh, yeah. That's pretty satisfying.
And I can just... I can use this keyboard in my texts.
Oh, that's nice.
It's, like, fun. You can also...
Does it make the sound in the text, then?
If I have that turned on. I turned that's it off cool. for when yeah. I use that keyboard. But you... My favorite typewriter that I use... I'm gonna go to the view typewriter section. I use the... Hank's Golden Touch. It's a white keyboard with gold accents.
Oh, I see. So it's like a...
And each one sounds different, and each one has its own little... Like, this one's the Hank's Prime Select.
Mm-hmm.
This one he refers to as a writer's best friend and confidant, and it makes a shook-shook sound here.
That makes some more sense to me now.
Yeah.
It's an app that can look, you can use the keyboard in other apps. I thought it was just the app, and I was like, okay, I understand why people wouldn't use that, but...
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it also, they just came out with something a couple years ago, where it's like a, you can connect your iPad to a keyboard,
mm-hmm.
and so then it's like you're writing with a typewriter, but it's on your iPad, and that was its own separate device you could purchase.
Oh, like a digital keyboard, a digital typewriter?
Yeah. And it's fun because when you type with each typewriter has its own little like nuances. So some of the letters are more faded with other typewriters. It types faster. You can change the app so that you can't backspace like you're using a real typewriter. I mean, it's like kind of infuriating when I accidentally click on it and I'm like trying to type a thing and I can't capitalize anything.
Do you see, you're a writer. Do you see yourself ever purchasing a typewriter? Is that something you would enjoy?
I think I would love to try. Rachel and I saw a few typewriters at the flea market today.
Oh, okay.
And each time I would like point at it and look at her like, it's a typewriter.
There's like a level of maintenance to that I just don't know anything about. But imagine, I mean, I buy like mechanical keyboards for my computer, which have not remotely the same, but a sort of similar type of feeling to typing, so I understand the love.
Very tangible. I mean, I do so much of my own writing comes from just like random thoughts that I have that I I'll put it somewhere and then I'll come back to it. Like, even when I take notes for the show, I normally am writing. I'd use my phone today because I left my notebook at home. But I love the physicality of it. I love, it feels so much more real. Like, it's a thing that I've produced and it exists when I...
Absolutely. I retain stuff better if I write it physically, so I understand that.
Yeah. So, Tom, please update your app because you have one loyal customer willing to shell out money for digital typewriters.
I think the idea is you use that and then you get the real one.
Yeah. He's so charming.
And single... A movie we should watch is the documentary about typewriters. Did you ever see that? There's a documentary about it. He is not, he didn't make it, but he is interviewed in it. What? It's about typewriters. Like, the entire movie is about it. It's supposed to be pretty good. What? Like, the history of it and kind of, like, why it's come back and become sort of popular. So I have to add that as a bonus.
We need to do a mini-sode.
Yeah.
Speaking of, we've been doing some mini-sodes.
Yes, we have. Book club.
Book club, if you guys are inclined.
Uncommon Type. Pretty good so far.
Pretty good so far. Okay. I guess, is that it?
I think so. I don't have anything else.
I know. I wish we had some Talk Tom to us, but that's okay. We're kind of in a slump right now. We're doing some movies that pretty much no one has watched.
Yes. But we're like two or three away from
Dragnet.
Prime time.
I'm excited. And I know that as soon as this podcast picks up and catches on, Tom's digital movie career will be reignited and all these movies will suddenly be top sellers in the iTunes app and Amazon rental.
We should probably make an Amazon link so we get like a nickel every time.
Oh, like a referral thing. I also thought of, actually. Yeah. That's a good idea.
That's it. That's how we'll advertise.
Nice. Okay. Well, if you're interested in continuing the conversation, you can find us on our website, www.talkin, that's without the G, talkintom.com. Or on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, and maybe a new Facebook group that we're thinking about starting.
For Talking Tom. All of that is up there. Pod Hanks Tomcast.
There you go. All right. Well, as always, I'm Josie.
And I'm Daniel.
Thanks for listening.